This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, it is good to be here with you all today. I know a few faces. Today, I plan to be sharing with you what I have learned through my work and also being on a few nonprofit boards. I've had a little experience that way. I don't know if it'll be anything new for you or not, but it has been an interesting 4 years since I started working for Anabaptist Foundation, and I know I've seen the insides of different nonprofits over these years, and seen a lot of different situations. And yeah, I'm just speaking from my heart. Take what you like and leave what you don't like. Some things may not apply to your organization. Some things may apply. At Anabaptist Foundation, I have the privilege of walking alongside donors, people who have a heart to give. They want to give money to ministry. I think probably 70% of my clients would be old order clients. So that is where a lot of my work lies, in the old order world and otherwise. And some of my board experience is with a board that I'm on. For the most part, until a year or two ago, I was the only non-Amish person on that board. But anyway, so help, we need money. Is that true? I wonder if that's an accurate statement. So I was asked to do this presentation back in about April of 2020. So I don't know if you were a ministry leader at that time, but if you were a ministry leader at that time, you probably still remember how your stomach felt right around that time. April of 2020, end of March, pretty much 3 years ago. So, 2 years ago. And I thought, well, maybe I should change the title. But then I thought, well, you know, there's probably still ministries that need money, and they're still trying to learn about what to do to fund their work. In traveling around the last 2 years, and especially in 21, the common refrain has been in our Anabaptist communities that from a money standpoint, COVID has been good for us. I've heard Richie say it a number of times. We are drowning in money. Okay? So there is lots of money in our circles. So, I would suggest that depending how your stomach felt at the beginning of April, probably had a lot to do with what type of fundraising model you had and how loyal a donor base that you had and how much reserve that you had. And if COVID created a crisis when it hit, what are you doing differently now so that when the next pandemic hits or the next whatever, that it's going to be different? So an observation from early days of COVID, this I think was about in April, I got an email from Richie, and he said that there are several patterns that are emerging in NPOs related to this COVID situation. And one of those patterns is that the NPOs, which are strongly tied to churches for accountability and support, will generally fare better than the less accountable to churches para organizations. And that seemed to hold true. There was one ministry that had just pulled the trigger on purchasing a property right before COVID hit. It was an adjoining property to their facility. They were going to expand their work. I was there, I think, about in January or February of that year, and they had showed me, you know, what they're hoping to do. And they were concerned about funds. They had been offered an interest-free loan to take care of the what they were going to need. If the funds, enough funds didn't come in, they had this interest-free loan they could take. Within 5 or 6 weeks of the shutdown, they had enough of funds in hand to purchase that property, to do their renovations that they were going to do over a period of about a year, and they were able, they had all their bills paid, and they had 6 to 9 months of cash in reserve for operating. I'm not sure what the figure is that they had gotten in, but they got a lot of money in right during that time. And this NPO is closely tied to its supporting churches. Part of their connection is created by a practice of intentionally rotating ministers from the supporting churches for visits. So if you're a supporting church of this organization, if you're a minister, you're gonna be rotating in and out of that ministry. So the ministers were very connected to what was happening at that organization. And so when COVID hit, people gave, and it was a big blessing. Now there are various ministry models, or you know, people are set up as integrated auxiliaries, or they're set up as a 501c3. Some, if you're a 501c3, typically you have to do your 990 filing, some state specific filings. But our observation at Foundation, when the pandemic hit, it didn't really matter so much what kind of an organization you were, but the difference was whether you're was how connected you were to your constituency base. That is really what made the difference. If you did not have a good connection to your donor base, your constituency base, it was tough. In the last 18 to 24 months, you know, there's unprecedented, maybe I should say almost unprecedented, in our lifetime, prosperity in the Anabaptist church circles. And I'd like to suggest that maybe if you're still lacking funds today, it might be for one of the three of three reasons, or maybe a combination of them. So maybe either your nonprofit doesn't have a healthy support base, or it doesn't have a compelling mission, or it's out of alignment with its constituency. So you need a support base that is broad. You should not just be relying on a few major donors. One of the temptations as when you're in a nonprofit, one of the temptations is to think, you know, if Josiah, who I know has all kinds of money, would just give more to us, then things would just be better for us. If that one person would just do it. No, you need a broader base than one person or a couple of people. There's a board member that I know in an organization, and the organization that he serves on is helping his community, even the broader community, with some health. It would be a clinic. And that particular organization has a debt that is over $1 million. Now, when you're an NPO and you have a debt of over $1 million, that doesn't feel too good, okay? This one board member, he could wipe that debt clean. I've had numerous conversations with him. He just sold a business. He's into cancer research. Sold some business, and it sold for more than millions. Okay? So he would have the money. But he has told me he does not want to wipe out the debt. And the reason he doesn't want to, he wants the community to own the project. He wants them to care about this project and to fund this thing. Now, he gives. He gives a lot. But interestingly enough, he's not an Anabaptist man, but he has a firm grasp on anonymous giving. And he does not like when people find out that he gave funds. But, you know, all of a sudden, the drive gets paved. Okay, where'd that money come from? You sort of put two and two together. But I'm just saying he does not want to be the sole donor for this organization. A healthy, broad support base contributes when they are well informed. If they don't know what's happening, what compelling reason is there for them to give? So you have to inform them. So do you have a healthy support base? Do you have a compelling mission? You know, an NPO that is compelling, it sells itself. You don't have to go out there and try to sell your organization. If you give concise information about what you're doing, you know, it's almost a reflex that the donors just get back in their pocket and they give you money. It doesn't take a lot of PR gimmicks if your mission is compelling. So, I get a lot of newsletters, and I enjoy looking at the newsletters. One thing I've noticed several times in the last 2 years, I'll get a newsletter, and it will invite people to a function. And it says, you know, at this function, we are going to have a drawing for something free, you know. Might be a getaway, might be something like that. Now, don't hear me say it's not a good idea. It's a good idea to give back to your donors, maybe at a PR event. You can give them a pen. You can give them something. But I'm just saying, if your mission is compelling enough, you don't need to lure people by giving them free stuff. And my guess is the next ministry down the road hears, oh, they did this, and did you hear it? You can, you know, and we won this. And so the next one that tries it, you know, it's going to get bigger and bigger. The lure is going to have to get bigger. If you have a compelling mission, you don't need a lot of PR gimmicks. Or maybe you're out of alignment with constituency. This one can get a little interesting. If donors trust the leadership, direction, and practice of an organization, they're going to support it. If they don't support it, I mean, if they don't agree, they won't support. It's hard for donors to give if they don't trust where the NPO is headed and if it doesn't align with their personal values. And I think something that we as NPOs need to wrestle with is there's an old adage, NPO leadership consistently drifts left and unless intentionally pulled back to the right. It's just the tendency of our nonprofits. And we actually care enough about this at the foundation. If you come to our table, we have the book there, Mission Drift by Peter Greer. You're welcome to pick one up if you don't have one. It is a good read, and just thinking about some of these things about are we drifting? If you're struggling for funds, you may want to do the hard work of looking at your leadership and seeing if they are staying mission true as the constituency views it, as your donor base views it. And if they could be the administrator or board members are left of center of the constituency you are serving, don't feel surprised if you feel a lukewarmness towards you from the constituency. So there are various ways that nonprofits get money. So there's the direct church support. These are the churches that take up offerings on a regular basis, like the church I go to. I know the first Sunday of the month it's going to be a mission offering, and I can pretty much tell you which five entities are going to get this year. And that would be on the conservative side, the conservative Mennonite side. On the old order side, it would be the church, would be the church endorsed committees going from family to family to take up collections. And I'll give you a little secret. And now maybe it's just because I work so much in the old order world, but I'm telling you, the money is in the old order world. It's not with us, what I would call middle Mennonites. That's and part of that is they don't have the Sunday morning offering basket being passed, so they are looking for ways that they can give funds beyond just their maybe biannual communion offering. If you have money coming from constituent churches, you have a good thing happening. And it probably actually means that if you're getting money from these churches, they would be comfortable with sending their young people to your organization. If you have this trust, you do everything you can to keep this trust. You work hard. You listen. Allow the churches to speak into what is happening. I really don't see any cons with this model of getting revenue unless you feel hampered in your mission by listening to what the church's leaders are saying. So, if you feel hampered by that, then maybe you need another constituency to support you. When the pandemic hit, if this was your main source of funding, you probably had a little reduction in those first month or maybe 2 months. But I'm sure that if you would have put a plea out saying, you know, help, we need funds, the church leaders would have kicked in and made those announcements, and money would have come. So maybe revenue through direct church support. There's also revenue from individuals. You know, there's a lot of individuals that will support your organization, and that's a good thing. And you might get this support for a number of reasons. Maybe they worked at your organization as a youth, or maybe they do something that they wish they could be involved in, but they can't for some reason. They just really like what you're doing. So there is a nonprofit currently that is looking at doing an expansion, going in a little bit of a different field than what they were. I feel like they're staying mission true and doing an expansion, and they haven't even figured out exactly how it's all going to be. But they know they're going to need a building, so they don't even know for sure yet. They don't even have the land yet. They're getting really close. But we are receiving donations. People are giving donations through the foundation, and it is incredible how many $25 and $50 and $250 donations are coming in through. And when you get enough of those, and then you have the $6,000, and then you have the $10,000, and then you have the $3,000, and it adds up. There's quite a bit of money sitting in there. But these people have been giving their donors good information. So you have individuals that give, and that is great. But don't depend on too few individuals. You want a lot of individuals. Then you have the nonprofits that generate most of their revenue internally, you know, fee for service income or sales, that type of thing. And those nonprofits are here. Think Hillcrest Home, think Faith Mission, and I mention them because I sit on those boards, so I can mention those names. But they both, a lot of their funding actually comes from, it's generated internally. So Hillcrest has the nursing home. Actually, let me start with Faith Mission. So Faith Mission, they have some business enterprises that work well with having their disadvantaged people that they're helping, like a bake shop and a wood shop. They can help with this project, so they generate some funds through this. Well, when the pandemic hit, their bake shop sales did not go down at all. It's just been like this. Hillcrest, on the other hand, when the pandemic hit, who wants to send their mother to a nursing home? Like, okay, suddenly things look very different. And they also have a therapy wing where they do therapy, and, you know, the surgeries weren't being done, the therapy wasn't needed. So both generating revenue internally, but very different for them when the pandemic hit. And then there's the nonprofits that have the event-generated income. So I'm on the board of a clinic in Belleville, a special needs clinic, and up until COVID, what we did was we had a yearly auction. Once a year, we have our event. And we start getting together in January, and then January, February, March, April, May, and third weekend in May is when our auction is. And we can raise a couple hundred thousand dollars in 2 days. That's wonderful, right? You get it out of the way for the year. Well, we had our January, February, March meetings, and now what? Middle of March hits, the auction, we've advertised, the date is out there. What in the world are we going to do? We did an appeal letter saying, you know, this is the situation we're in. Of course, everybody knew what situation we were in. We postponed the auction till August. We did have the auction that same year. I'm not telling you we did the right thing. I'm just telling you that's what we did. We took as many measures as we could to try to make sure that we aren't some kind of COVID outbreak place. And we also tried to do it just a little bit low-key. But, dear newsletter lady, we always put something in the local newsletter, just something, and this year we for sure kept it a little small so it wouldn't attract too much of attention. And my wife had submitted that, and she gets a phone call like a day or two before this event, and this lady's beside herself. She's like, I'm so sorry. I can't believe this happened. Like, I was just coming up through Belleville, and I saw the sign, and I remembered I totally forgot to put this in. And she said, we will make this right. We will make this. I mean, I'll figure something out. So what did she do? She put a full-page ad on about the third page of the newspaper. I'm the only non-Amish guy on the committee, and so there's three numbers there, but I'm the only one that carries the phone. So Friday night, we're just done with our first event. I get this phone call, I answer, and it was about 10 minutes before I could thank the caller for their concern. This caller was truly concerned. She truly figured we'd have a bunch of dead people in the valley in a couple weeks. And it was real to her. So I don't know if we should have the event or not. But I also knew if we didn't have that event, the struggle it would be through that next year. Another NPO that I know, they had this event planned once a year. They have a supper with about 400 guests, and it brings in enough of funds in that one supper for their whole year. They put out a letter saying we have to cancel for this year. They brought in as much as they normally did through that one letter. They had a good connection to their donor base, better than what we did. If your NPO is mainly funded by events that generate income, it would be good to try to build a donor base apart from that event. Don't just make it one event. If the revenue stream that you had prior to COVID failed for you when COVID hit, I would suggest that you think about how you could be prepared for the next pandemic, or the next, I say pandemic, but the next whatever it's going to be. And I would also suggest that maybe there would be value in testing your assumptions about revenue streams. So, you know, we as NPOs, we get stuck in these, this is the way we have always done it. You know, we did this event this year, we'll do it again next year, and then next year, and next year. And maybe we're stuck in a rut. Another NPO, when COVID hit, they said, this is terrible. Now, this is an NPO where most of the board would be conservative Anabaptist people, and the people at the NPO would actually be what we would call English professionals. Because somehow, we as NPOs sometimes have the idea that we don't have the expertise to do some of these things because we don't have the education. Just take that out of your head. We have it in us. We just might have to learn a few things. This NPO, the English were just devastated. They weren't sure what was going to happen. The old order committeemen stepped up to the plate, and they sent out people to get funds for this this particular NPO. And those committeemen brought in more money by simply asking than the event itself ever had. They had a good support base, and they realized, you know what, we can actually do this without all the doing all these events. Now, the events are important for PR connection that way. But think about your revenue stream and think about, is there a different way to do this? Like, could we do it differently? So there are various models of ministry, various fundraising models, but it's not the model that makes the difference, but rather how connected you are to your donor base, to your constituency. So, how do you build relationships with the constituency or your donor base? Because I think building relationships is the key. If you're a nonprofit leader, you need to build relationships. And some of you sitting here are on the Anabaptist, the NPO email group. Some of y'all get that blast. And this question of how to connect with donors comes up from time to time. And it is good and it is needful to have good systems in place for your to connect with your donors, to have that piece done right. But I would suggest that sitting behind a desk and sending out an email blast is not going to do much for you if you want deep donor support. The emails can probably do some good, but it might get you some small donors, but you're looking for major donors. And a major donor wants to hear in person from someone that they have a reason to trust. Having leadership which is reflexively trusted across constituency is more valuable than a whole lot of PR tactics and slick marketing. And remember, I said a majority of the money, a lot of the money is in the old order world. And we Middle Mennonites, we all fish out of, we don't even hardly go there. Well, the email tactics don't work so well. So I would say like a newsletter. People think, oh, we need to cut costs. We got to get newsletters on email so that, you know, we don't have to do all that shipping. Well, in our world, you get a newsletter. You might read it on a Sunday afternoon, and what happens to it? You chuck it in the wastebasket. In the old order world, that thing goes from you to you to you to you. It's multiplied big time. And if you're doing some kind of email blast, you didn't reach him. So if building relationships is key, how does an NPO leader build relationships? It's basically two words. It's with presence as a human being. He has to be present in church and community life beyond his specific NPO role. You know, you show up at the minister's meeting, you know, the minister's meetings, and you fit in there naturally. Don't show up there and stick out like a sore thumb. If you do that, you're better off not even showing up. The other thing you do as an NPO leader is you serve on committees. You demonstrate that you actually care about other nonprofits in your community, not just the one that you're in charge of. And you attend community events as much as you can. You get into these communities, you attend those events, and then when you're there afterwards, you help them clean up, you help them stack the chairs. You actually show that you are interested in their project. If you're in an area where there are Old Order Amish people, take an interest in their projects. Go to their annual benefit auctions and see if there's a way that you can help. And if you don't live in the Old Order communities, there are plenty of places that you can show interest in other people's projects. Now, I want to talk about newsletters just a little bit. You know, a newsletter can be a great way to connect with a donor. If your mission is worth something, then it's probably worth having a newsletter. You know, I've met mission leaders that, it's a pain to do the newsletter. And, you know, do we really need to do this newsletter? And I'm like, how are people going to know if you don't do a newsletter? Like, hello, you need to do a newsletter. How often? Well, I would say at least once a quarter. And the newsletter should add value to your donor. It should be informational for them that they understand what you are doing. It can be in the form of stories or, information about what is happening. Maybe a financial report, especially if you're an NPO that operates on, you know, people giving you money. Small donors may not think about these things, but major donors want to know how the funds are doing. You know, the investment they're making in your nonprofit is really no different than any other investment they make in their own companies. They are just as concerned, and sometimes actually they're more concerned about what happens with the donated dollars. They want a good return on investment. Good information enables good giving. And, you know, I'm always a bit surprised when I see these newsletters that come out and they don't contain any financial information. Zero. Zippo. It doesn't say a thing about where their finances are. Maybe that's okay. I don't know. But how is a donor supposed to know? That's why they use Anabaptist Foundation, so they can find out. We'll try to go get them the information. But sometimes I think maybe as NPO leaders, we think that, you know what, if people really knew how much money we had, they wouldn't give. Because, you know what, we have so much. We're seeing people right now, they have 24 months of operating expenses, operating funds. The donor wants his money to be working. He doesn't want to put his money somewhere where it's just going to sit there for 18 months. He wants that money to be doing something. If you're sitting on a pile of cash right now, I'm telling you, get out there and get something done. COVID really sort of, it crimped things. And we couldn't do a lot. I get that. But now, get out there and get it done. Don't do it unwisely, but get that money spent. We need you to. I had a really refreshing conversation with an NPO leader at the end of last year. So about December, I sat with this guy eating lunch, and he is on the nonprofit board. It's a small outfit, and they don't have paid staff, so that doesn't make a difference, okay? I get that. But he said they just had a board meeting the night before, and they were talking about where they are with funding, and they're doing very well with funding. But so every year, at the end of the year, they always use this appeal letter. So what are they going to do this year? Because they all know they have their budget is met. They have a very healthy reserve for next year. What in the world are we going to do? So what did they do? They said, you know what? We're going to tell the donors that it's actually been very good, and our needs are met, and give to the next charity. Now that takes some guts. But I'm telling you, if they run into where they need money and they put in there, you know what, we have this need coming up, there will be money coming in because they were honest with them. And I asked him later, I said, you know, so how did this affect? He said the money still came. But putting that in there, it just raises the trust of that organization. Another thing about newsletters, I say keep them personal. There are some newsletters I get that seem so impersonal. I'm like, this is some third-party guy writing this thing. Like, if I want to know about this nonprofit, like, I want to hear from somebody on the field. I want to hear from somebody that's actually doing the work. I don't want to hear from some third party that is writing this article. And it can be cumbersome to get those articles. I know what it's like to, you know, we need these articles. The newsletter is supposed to be going out, and field personnel hasn't actually written it yet. It's a pain. But make them personal. Make them something that are the people that are going to be listening or reading them, it's going to bring value to them, and it puts them in that country. They may never be able to go there, but if it's a personal story, they are there in their mind. What about events? So I told you I'm on that board of that clinic in Belleville, and we live in an area where in this event, we have a wide range of donors. We have Old Order Amish, we have Liberal Mennonites, all helping with this event. The one Amish group is not very okay with what's happening, and they've said a few things that they, you know, don't do. You know, you can't help with this. You can come to the event, but you can't actually help. Okay, that's fine. We have to work with that type of thing. One of the things we've been told in doing this event, if you would take credit card, you would actually bring more funds in. And I believe that's exactly right. If we would allow people to swipe a credit card, it's much less pain. Why don't we? The reason we don't is because we know the negative feedback we would get, and maybe actually being cut off from the one group saying you can't go there. And for sure, some of the people that are working in the office couldn't do it. They wouldn't be allowed to be in there. So, will we take credit cards someday? I'm pretty sure we do. We will. But we have to work at getting that trust and working at it slowly instead of just saying, look, that's the craziest thing you can think. I mean, you're saying, what the world? That just doesn't make sense. We're going to do credit card. Well, go ahead, do your credit card, and go ahead and have those people not come. You know, you got to be connected with your donor base. Sometimes it feels like we, Middle Mennonites, NPOs, are sitting here all with our, we're all here like this. You know, you see these, you go to these third world countries and you see all these beggars, and sometimes it just feels like it's just, we're all just sitting there like this. I don't think that's the case, and that's not what we're trying to portray, but sometimes even when I have people call me, they're just like, you know, just, can't you just send some money my way? Like, well, it's donor advised, you know, you need to connect with donors. Well, yeah, it's just, you know, wherever we can get the money, as long as we can get the money, that then we're good. Well, I would suggest that if the donor senses that it's more about the money coming from them than about themselves, then you're probably done. For sure with a major donor. If they get the sense that, really, when it comes right down to it, the only reason you're here is because you think that I got a lot of money and you want it. They'll work with somebody else. So, care about the donors. When you go talk to a donor, it's about him. You know, in my work, as I talk to these clients, the Charitable Gift Fund clients, sometimes it's interesting. We don't even talk about the fund. We will talk about their family problems, the church problem, the all these other things. And it's like, well, what good did that do? How did I help, how did I help a charity? Well, I actually helped the donor. And we also go sit with the nonprofits, the charities, and we let them cry on our shoulders too if they want to. But with the donor, it's about the donor. It is not about your charity. One more thing that I want to touch on is charitable solicitation registrations. That it's a little bit of a long thing there. But if you are fundraising, in our conservative Anabaptist circles, we are all about doing things efficiently, and we trust, and that is a wonderful thing. So some of these legal requirements, like, why in the world would we do some of these charitable solicitation registrations? Because you know what? They're a pain. Anabaptist Foundation actually offers that service because we care that our nonprofits are in legal compliance. And some nonprofits have to do this, and some it doesn't seem like they have to, depending how they're set up. We don't give legal advice. You go to the lawyers for that. You go to Josiah for that. But if you're a 501c3 that files a 990, then almost always you have to file the charitable solicitation registrations. And basically what that is so they are set up to try to... You do this to protect the donor. So there are a lot of fraudulent charities out there. We've researched some of these. There are some that have been given hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they literally spent, like, you know, just a wee little bit on paper plates. Like, it's just, you can't even imagine what some of these charities try to do. So what happens when there's a bad guy in the room? You know, when you were the first grader and you were bad and loud, and the whole class had to come in from recess. It wasn't just the one guy. So that's a little bit how it is with the charitable solicitation registrations. Because of all these bad guys out there, the good guys also have to do these. You have to comply, and it is the state's way of trying to truly protect their citizens from these fraudulent charities. We just trust that Lighthouse Publication is going to be a good place. I mean, what the world? Mike's working there. So we know that that's got to be a good place. The next place, you know, we just know it's good. But what it does, charitable solicitation registrations, it's an annual filing that you have to do. You can come talk to me about it later. I don't have time to get into the deep waters of it. But you register, and then you renew annually with the various states where you need to, and then it allows you to actually solicit in those states. So if you get a newsletter and you see the fine print on the bottom of the newsletter, like, it's all this real little stuff. They usually just make it as little as possible. That means it's what these people have done. They have registered, and they're just, because you're supposed to put it on there. There's requirements that way. And this costs money. And why would an NPO actually go through this painful process? Well, it's because it's the right thing to do. It will not bring you in any money. But I did have one NPO that told me, an NPO leader, he said, you know, I remember the day I was at this house, we were having board meeting, and our auditor was there, and our auditor was telling us, look, y'all really need to be doing these things. And the board's sitting there, things were extremely tight. They didn't even have enough money to make payroll that month. But the auditor's saying this is a legal issue. And they're thinking, what in the world are they going to do? And he said, they decided we are going to do this. And he said, we have never looked back. The money has always been there from that time forward. He said, he doesn't know if there's any correlation. But he said, from that time forward, they have never struggled for money. And that's been 6-7 years ago. I'm not saying you do that so that God gives you. But I am saying if we do the right things, God does bless. So I just encourage you as you go fundraise that you provide good information to your donors and think about, do you have a compelling mission? And think about your alignment with your constituency. Are you aligned or not? So may God bless you as you fundraise for the kingdom.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.